This is Power 102.
Good afternoon to all our listeners. Welcome to today's program. As we have been through the voice of one Steve Cann, we've been advertising that today, who's that? Yeah, a man called Steve Cann. We've been advertising today and asking the question, positing the question that has been raised by one Lawrence Dupre, who is seeking to retrieve what he considers his company from the clutches, a little bit of a pejorative word there, of the government. As we know, the background to it is that approximately eight years ago, the then chairman of the group, Lawrence Dupre, approached the central bank for a bailout. The company had found itself in a deep hole, and the central bank took on the responsibility, of course, with the backing of the government of Trinidad and Tobago. Memorandum of understanding was signed, and so on and so on, and the government, through the central bank, took charge of the company. 8 years later, a lot of water has flowed under the bridge, and there is what is inspiring this program really is an attempt, an obvious attempt, and he has not made it, done it in secrecy or quiet or so, but Lawrence Dupre has indicated every intention to retake what he considers to be his company. So we have a couple people here to discuss that matter. One of them is here already, Peter Pumel, who is the chairman of the CLICO Policy Holders Group and somebody who has been articulating on this matter from the inception. Welcome to the program, Peter.
Thank you very much, Tony, and let me say a pleasant good afternoon to all your listeners.
Right, and in a short while, we expect to have with us Afra Raymond, someone who has, like Peter, been talking about this situation for quite some time and writing about it, analyzing the situation and so on. As I indicated, Peter, my core concerns that I want responses from you fellows today is to say whether or not technically Lawrence Dupre can retrieve, quote-unquote, his company from the government, from the central bank, and take hold of the company once more. But before we go in to answer that question, can you do, I'm sure that you have the history right under your thumb, give our listeners an appreciation. I did a very abbreviated thing a moment ago about how CLICO came to be where it is today.
This is Power 102, empowering you.
Thank you very much, Tony, for the opportunity. First of all, we have to take our minds back to that fateful year 2009, and just before that, 2008, and you would recall there was a financial meltdown globally, and you had huge companies like AIG, you had the banks, Bear Stearns, and a number of international banks.
Serious financial institutions in the U.S.
crashing.
Morgan
and Stanley. Yeah. The whole list of them. Bank of America. All of them were in trouble. Yeah. And apparently, we were not immune to that situation. And we on the, I think it was, if my memory serves me correctly, it was the 30th of January, 2009. There was an emergency press conference called at the central bank, the Twin Towers. I don't know if you were there, Tony, but I know a number of journalists. You weren't there. Quite a number of journalists.
I was in another place, which is, I promised to tell Chris about, but that's
okay,
another,
that's another matter.
Yeah.
But I looked at it on television. It was being carried live. You had at the head table, you had people like the then former Minister of Finance, Mrs. Karen Nunes de Scherer. You had the then Inspector of Financial Institutions, Mr. Carl Hiralal. You had people like Mr. Lawrence Dupre himself. And that alone tells you the kind of high-powered team that was having this press conference.
I presume the governor.
The governor of the central bank, then the
Ewart Williams
was also there. So I mean, you had a really high-powered team making a presentation to this media conference. And one of the things that basically came out there is that CLICO was insolvent. And the other subsidiary companies like CLICO Investment Clico Investment Bank, they were going to pull their license because they were, you know, really, really in a bad way, and there was very little they could have done to salvage that situation. You also had, the governor making certain statements relative to the Minister of Finance.
One of the major things was that the fund into which all insurance companies had to pay money, it was bare in terms of Clico.
Right. Well, the thing about it is all insurance companies have to carry what is known as a statutory fund.
Yes.
And Clico's statutory fund was in deficit initially to the tune of some $5 billion. And then subsequent to that press conference, I think the central bank governor came back and said it was more closer to $10 billion. So that you could well imagine the dire straits that the company found itself in. And he listed a number of reasons why the company would have found itself was highly leveraged. They were engaging in all sorts of different practices that were not acceptable in financial terms and so on, which I don't need to bother your audience with at this stage.
An important point was that the governor complained not only then, well, I didn't hear it then, but subsequently, that the legislation was very weakened. The central bank had very little control to regulate and to monitor the company.
Correct. Yes, he was making that claim. I personally don't necessarily share that particular view, and I could always get into that. One of the other points I think I need to make is the question of related party transactions. So there was a significant amount of related party transactions, meaning that some of the subsidiary companies that Clico, or sister companies, let's call it that, sister companies of Clico, particularly Clico Investment Bank, they had significant sums of money invested in that entity. And therefore, what you have is a situation is him, the right hand, taking from the right hand and giving to the left hand, and the left hand not paying back the money.
Clico was the cash cow.
Clico was the cash cow, that exactly. So there were a series of issues affecting Clico. What happened after that is that the government announced what we would call a bailout. And they said they were going to inject some $5 billion into Clico initially, and another $2 billion roughly into CIB in order to ensure that the depositors in CIB were paid. Interestingly, all the depositors, not the related party, but the third, what we call third-party depositors, those are depositors who have no link to the company in terms of whether they are senior management, directors, and so on. So there's no direct affiliation with the company. All of them have gotten paid their money because that portfolio was transferred to First Citizens Bank, and people could have either gone to First Citizens and gotten cash for the deposits, or they could have continued that deposit take out a new deposit, I should say, with First Citizens and continue that relationship. So they got sorted out. On the other hand, the Clico policyholders, and we have to separate the Clico policyholders into two main categories. You had the traditional portfolio, and then you had what you would call the non-traditional or the executive flexible premium annuity policyholders.
Investment portfolio.
Yes. And, everybody was in jeopardy, regardless of whether you were traditional or not, because that statutory fund would have covered all the policyholders. And therefore, in terms of numbers, based on my recollection, you were talking about some 225,000 policyholders, of which I think 200,000 were the traditional policyholders and another 25,000 were the new
investor.
Yes. Yeah. So, but interestingly, that portfolio comprised a larger portfolio in terms of dollar value.
Yeah.
So that if my memory serves me correctly, you were talking about some 25 billion dollars, if my memory serves me correctly, in terms of that portfolio relative to the other portfolio, which is a much smaller portfolio, maybe somewhere around maybe 12, 15 billion, as the case may be. So you can well imagine the magnitude of the problem. And as you know, the administration in office at the time was the Patrick Manning administration. And interestingly, the current Prime Minister, Dr. Keith Christopher Rowley, was a senior cabinet member in that cabinet. And you also had the current Minister of Finance, Mr. Colm Imbert. He was also a senior cabinet minister in that cabinet. And that particular administration, in order to ensure that the economy didn't collapse, because remember, Clico comprised a significant portion in terms of the economy and contribute to the GDP of Trinidad and Tobago in a very
numbers, economy, etc.
And it pose
big shareholding in Republic Bank.
Absolutely. When you check the number of companies that were subsidiaries of Clico, you had Republic Bank, you had Angostura, you had Homer Construction, HCL, you had
the methanol company,
MHDL and MHIL, the one that is still on the books, but it's in Oman. The list goes on and on. I don't need to list. And then all the malls, you had Long Circular Mall, Trin City Mall, and by the way, HCL is the second largest land bank after the government in Trinidad and Tobago. So you could well understand the magnitude of this problem. And clearly, it was a question of too big to fail. There's no way the government could have allowed Clico to collapse. I've heard some comments. They said, why they didn't allow the thing to fail, and then we would have picked up the pieces after and so on. That would have affected, they would have had what is known as, Clico created what is known as contagion risk for the entire financial sector.
Contaminated the whole financial sector.
It would have been a domino effect. You understand? As a matter of fact, there was, I recalled very clearly, that Republic Bank, there was a long line outside their doors within the first few days of the announcement of the collapse of Clico, where people were concerned that they would have also been affected by the collapse of Clico. And they had to quell that very, very quickly. And they successfully did that. And so far, I haven't heard any further problems with respect to Republic Bank. So I want to put that on record.
Okay. So, all right. So we had that situation. That's a broad kind of outline of what transpired and so on, and we come up to the present time.
Yes.
Of course, successive governments have invested more and more into the company, and I don't know what the final figure is. Sometimes I hear 20 billion, 25 billion. No one seems to know what is the exact figure that is owed to the government, that the government put into the company. The company now is said to be once again solvent.
As far as we are concerned, yes.
And functioning. There are outstanding payments, you tell me,
to the policyholders. Yes, they got a portion of it. But just before I get into that, there are two key points that I need to make. When the collapse came, there was a memorandum of understanding that was signed between the government and the people at the Clico officials, so to speak, which would comprise the shareholders, which we will talk about a little later in the program. And that memorandum of understanding outlined exactly how the recovery was going to take place in terms of sale of certain assets, Republic Bank, methanol holdings. Certain key assets had to be sold. And in the event, and at the end, at the bottom of all that is that the policyholders were supposed to be made whole. Nobody was supposed to lose any money. And that is what policyholders relied on to leave their money in Clico. They rolled over their policies. Nobody went to the courts to file actions against the company. Yeah. So they got a stay, so to speak. Subsequent to that, in June of 2009, a shareholders agreement was signed, which we will also come to, which is key to what is going on right now. And that is what gave effect or operationalized those agreements, because the government was not a shareholder in Clico. There was no loan agreement signed with Clico vis-a-vis the money that was injected. And therefore, the only way that the government could realistically recover its money, it had to have a direct say in the goings-on at Clico and CL Financial, more particularly CL Financial, because Clico was put under the jurisdiction of the Central Bank as a result of Section 44D. But CL Financial, which was the parent company, they needed to have a direct say. And coming out of that shareholders' agreement, four directors of the nominated by the government were appointed or elected shareholders on the company on a board of seven. So the government had the majority. So the balance of power currently is in favor of the government, where there are four government-nominated directors. So those were two key points. And the other point to come forward, as you're asking me about the policyholders. Now, as I said, the whole purpose of this bailout was to ensure that policyholders were made whole. As you would recall, the Patrick Manning administration lost government, I think it was in 2010, and the People's Partnership came into office, and they had a whole different perspective on how this Clico situation should have been resolved. They came up with these zero coupon bonds over 20 years, and they paid $75,000 initially in cash. That was a major disaster for the policyholders, because what that meant is that people would have gotten maybe about 50 cents or less on the dollar. We were able to negotiate a slightly better deal, where we were able to get them to come up with what is known as CLECO investment fund units, which are traded on the stock exchange right now. The underlying asset there are the Republic Bank shares that CLECO, a portion, I should say, not all the Republic Bank shares, but a significant portion of the Republic Bank shares, the underlying asset of that particular investment. So it meant that those policyholders got, in terms of a real payment, they probably got around 85% of the principal sum, not the interest that would have been due on the policies. Mm-hmm. So if to fast forward to 2017, where we are now is that there's been significant asset recovery in terms of CLECO and CL Financial. So that, as far as I'm aware, based on the information I have, although when you listen to the government spokespeople, they will tell you, no, CLECO is still has a deficit. But that is old talk. What has to happen is they have to revalue those assets to current market value, which they have not done in a number of cases. And therefore, that is what creates the impression that it is still in the red, as it were. But as far as we are concerned, CLECO is in the black. It is in a position to make good on the money that it owes the government and the money that it still owes the policyholders.
Yeah.
And that is basically where we are at this point.
Okay, so Afra Rehman has arrived.
Afra,
thanks for coming.
And
well, Peter went through the history because, as I indicated to him, the crux of the program today that you fellas have to answer is whether or not Mr. Dupre has not made a secret of it. He has made it quite clear that he wants back his company, quote unquote, and he is preparing to retrieve his company from the clutches, quote unquote, of the central bank and the government and so on. So we've got a kind of history from when this thing started in 2009 to the present situation. So the crux of the matter, unless you want to add something to the history that Peter has given, the crux of the matter is, can Mr. Dupre retrieve his company?
This is Power 102.
Well, the only thing I would add, thanks for having me on the program, Tony, and good to be on the show with Peter again. And thanks to the listeners who are giving us their attention, people online and so on. The only thing I would add to what you're saying, Tony, is that the reason we're having this discussion is that, in fact, the central bank has not, and I know Peter would be agreeing with me on this, the central bank has not been enforcing its own rules. Okay? So we have a situation in which, had the central bank been enforcing its own rules, and that is the central bank under the leadership of former Governor Ewart Williams, who is now the advisor to the Minister of Finance, Mr. Colin Butt, and the current governor, Dr. Alvin Hillier, had they been enforcing their own fit and proper rules, there would simply be no question of Mr. Dupre and his cohort, because there's many people, let's just call him a cohort, Mr. Dupre and his cohort, regaining control of anything, because they're not qualified to do so. Under the rules in this country, those rules in this country have been in place since February of 2005. And we had a column last week in the newspaper in which the governor seemed to be trying to make a case, 2 weeks ago in the Sunday Guardian, seemed to be trying to make a case that he thinks there's a problem and he's going to be working on rules. And I want to say that is simply just not so, Governor. I hope you're listening. The fact is that rules have been in place for 12 years. And the question for all of us with an inquiring mind and a conscience has to be, why have the regulators of the financial system in our country not been enforcing their own rules? Those rules are for the protection and the prosperity of the current generation, mm-hmm. of our treasury and the future generation. We don't want people looking back to ask, well, what did you do? And I'm taking the opportunity, Governor, to say, what did you do?
Yeah. And if the governor responds, as he seemed to be indicating that the rules cannot be enforced unless an attempt is made. I'm not saying that is so. Unless an attempt is made by those persons to retrieve their company. So therefore, in his argument, we are preparing ourselves. And if that attempt comes, then we will be in a position to do something. Peter?
Well, now this issue that you have touched on this afternoon is a very complex issue, Tony. Mm-hmm. There's so many facets to this issue. Now, I'll just give you an example. We have to also make a distinction between regulated companies
yes.
and non-regulated companies.
Yes.
CLECO is a regulated company, but CL Financial, the parent company, is not a regulated company. And the fit and proper test that Afra is referring to, which I am very much aware of, covers the regulated companies. it does not cover the... The last time I checked, but maybe I might have more up-to-date information.
What I heard him saying is that it covers the financial sector.
Well, yeah.
Insurance companies, banks, commercial banks,
if you as long as you regulate it. So if in fact CL Financial is regulated, and so far as the sector... Because remember, CL Clico, and you have to go back a little bit. Initially, Clico was regulated by an office in the Ministry of Finance,
correct,
called the Supervisor of Insurance.
Correct.
And that was a totally unsatisfactory situation. A number of companies would have collapsed. I'm sure you recall, Amber, under that arrangement.
Yeah. But as I understand it, while the what the central bank would have, and that's a regulated or non-regulated, would have governance over, if you like, are the financial elements of Clico, CL Financial. For instance, a methanol company, they have no say in that with regard to directorship
but
rather the financial companies, which is central bank. Have
no, of course. But what I'm saying is, remember, CL Financial is a holding company.
Yeah.
The other companies that are subsidiary companies of CL Financial are real companies. So Republic Bank is a real, when I say real company, I mean a company which has employees and companies as we know it. And therefore, Republic Bank is regulated. It's under the Financial Institutions Act.
Sure.
The central bank is the regulator. Interestingly, and that's another issue which we could deal with. The regulator being the one who is also managing the affairs of the company. There's a whole different discussion.
There are
conflicts of interest inside of there. But the point is, Clico is an insurance company which is falls under the Financial Institutions Act, and the regulator is the central bank.
Yes.
Unlike in the case of CL Financial, the regulator for CL Financial, as far as I'm aware, is not the central bank under normal. Okay. But after we have more.
Let me just clarify this point, because this is an important point for us to get clear.
Sure.
And it's an apparent difference between us. It's not really a difference.
Yeah,
The fit and proper rules define who is qualified to act as auditors, officers, directors, and controlling shareholders, which is what CL Financial is.
Correct.
Of financial institutions.
I agree with you.
Therefore,
yes,
if we are applying that book of rules published in 05, we call it fit and proper regulations, to this situation, CL Financial must, and who is in the board of directors of CL Financial, and who owns most of the shares of it, because it owns most of the shares of Clico, as well as most of the shares of Republic. If we have
it's not a question of Lawrence Dupre alone.
No, this is the point. Others,
that's why I keep saying Lawrence and his cohort. I always say it's more than one. It's too many people to name.
But let me ask.
So that's the case I was making.
Yeah, okay, I understand that.
Let me ask both Peter and Afra to let's set aside the fit and proper for the moment.
Okay.
We're not eliminating it at all. We can't eliminate it even if we want to. But we're talking about under the memorandum of understanding. We are talking about the whole business of what is owed to the government, what is owed to policyholders, etc., etc. Is, or to use Afra's combination, Lawrence Dupre and cohort, are they entitled now to retake the company? Without any one of you.
When you talk about entitlement, you have to look at it either legally, morally.
This is such a complex. The moral part will deal when we come with fit and proper.
Yes, that has some legal and moral implications,
fit and proper. Yes.
But on a strictly legal basis, and I said, there's a nice fine point that I've raised vis-a-vis
the controlling shareholder.
That's an important fine point. Because that entity can direct in an indirect sense. Although when you sit on a board as a director, if you look at the Companies Act Section 99, it will tell you that you are supposed to seek the interests of the company first, shareholders and the employees. So you should have no special interest then when you sit there as a director to say I'm going to seek Afra's interest because he controlled most. He's a major shareholder, so I'm going to seek his interest. You're not supposed to be doing that.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, you're running afoul of the Companies Act.
Yes.
Right. So to come back to the question as to whether he can, because we're talking clearly would be from a legal perspective, whether he can in terms of does the law allow him to do that?
Yeah.
And you say we setting aside the fit and proper
for
the time being. Now, let's get to what has actually happened to understand whether he can. Now, you would have recalled the media conference that the Honorable Minister of the Prime Minister held on his return from Grenada, the heads of government.
Yes, mm-hmm. Heard it, yeah. Heard it, yeah.
And he made certain references to the CLICO issue. And I found it interesting that he spent a lot of time, I found, in terms of talking about the CLICO. And he said that there's a meeting that is coming up, apparently, on the 26th of this month, whereby the shareholders, and to understand the shareholders of CL Financial, there are about 325. The last time I checked, it could be, may have made some changes. I'm sure, Afra, you would have pulled that companies.
It's 325.
Yeah, about 325. Yeah, yeah. And interestingly, if you go to Afra's blog, you'll see some of the names that pop up at you. Botiwari, Cardinal Teixeira, and a couple other famous names, pop up. I don't think they have sold their shares, so they're still shareholders in CL Financial. Now, those 325 shareholders, because I attended, I stormed, not like our friend Berkey Burke. I got a proxy and I stormed one of the CL Financial shareholders meeting. It was held, I think, in the QPC, the Queen's Park,
of
their things over there. But I had a proxy, some good kind shareholder, small of course, maybe a couple hundred shares, gave me a proxy and I attended. And my understanding of what
year was that roughly?
Ooh, that was in
roughly
2015.
Okay, okay,
yeah, somewhere.
I'm trying to get an idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Mr. Yet Ming was the chairman at the time, Marlon Holder was the managing director. Up until recently, as you would have read, mm-hmm. he was unceremoniously parted ways with the company.
Yes.
And at that meeting, it was explained to the shareholders that there's a company called United Shareholders Limited that was set up specifically to represent the interests of all the shareholders. I found that very interesting. And that company, from what I understand, I think maybe had two directors or something. I think one, Kirk Carpenter and Roger Dupre, who's a relative. Kirk is also a relative. Yeah, both relative. I'm not sure what is the nature of the relationship.
They're
cousins or something like that. And they were the ones who were the directors of this United Shareholders Limited. And they are the ones who were speaking on behalf of the shareholders in terms of its discussions with the government. Because remember, all of this time, there was a shareholders agreement, which Afra has referred to and I have referred to, that was signed in June of 2009. I think you had asked for it under the Freedom of Information.
It's
only because of Afra I got a copy.
Yeah.
I think it's Conrad Enil was the one who
signed
off on it.
He was acting at the time. Finance. Carrier might have been out of the country.
Yeah. But he is known as a Minister of Finance in his own right. Yeah?
He's
very knowledgeable and so on. Yeah. So that shareholders agreement would have expired several times over the life of this debacle. The last time, based on the information I have, is either October or November of 2016 was the last time it expired. So right now there's no shareholders agreement in place. Now that shareholder agreement is very, very important and instructive in terms of this whole issue, because what that does, it establishes the relationship between the shareholders and the government. And I think CLICO to some extent, but it's more shareholders and the government. And what it says is that it allows the government to nominate four directors on a board of seven to sit on the CL Financial board. And therefore, the balance of power is in favor of the government, as opposed to the three directors who represent, let's call it that for the time, the interests of the shareholders. So that what it does, it allows the sale of those assets, because that is now linked to the MOU, which they identified certain assets that had to be disposed of in order to make the policyholders whole and also pay back the government money that is due. Yeah. This meeting that is going to be called on the 26th is intended to change that balance of power. And the reason that I understand that they have said they wanted to do that is because it's being alleged that the government is mismanaging CL Financial and CLICO. While one would say the government is not directly involved in CLICO, it is indirectly involved in CLICO via the Central Bank Act, because the Minister of Finance may give specific or general directions
to the Central Bank governor
in terms of how they run the affairs of CLICO. Mm-hmm. And that's a very serious thing. And I think he has exercised those powers in other areas. I think the exchange rate thing.
The question is, technically, can they retrieve the company?
Right. So, yes, I'm coming back to that. So, that meeting that is being called, they are legally entitled to call that meeting. It's under Section 133.
And who is
the shareholders I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. The shareholders are legally entitled to call that meeting. It's a Section 133 meeting where if you own more than 5% or more of the shares of the company, you can requisition a meeting. You can call on the board of directors to call a meeting, and you can present your agenda in terms of the resolutions you would want passed. Certainly, those resolutions would be either to remove the government directors, because they have already given an ultimatum in the media, give them 7 days to have those directors removed. Or else. And that meeting now is being called pursuant to that ultimatum. And therefore, if that meeting takes place, and based on what I'm hearing so far, it is on track, then those shareholders who would be in the majority, because the government only has about 14% of the shareholding, interestingly, of CL Financial, and they got that. We could talk about that another time. That's another, how they got that shareholding. But suffice it, they have 14%. They are not going to be able to prevail in those circumstances. And therefore, legally, the shareholders can then regain control of CL Financial based on from a management perspective. They will now be on.
And when you talk about shareholders, you talk about Lawrence Dupre and company.
And
the
big
shareholders.
The two biggest shareholders are Lawrence
and Andrea. People who are currently shareholders. I'm not too sure if I haven't looked at the list recently. I don't know if you looked at it. Andre is on that list?
Yeah, he has a company, just like Lawrence.
Is it
a company name?
So Afra, do you agree that technically they, meaning Dupre and company, can retrieve the company?
Yes, and we need to be very alert about this moment. I agree that the national interest, the public interest, is a tremendous peril at this time, because from my perspective, is that the cards appear to be in favor of the company reverting
to
its original chiefs. Okay?
Yeah.
And I think the two or three things, we meant to the fit and proper point already, but two fresh points I would bring forward for consideration here in terms of perils to the national interest is, number one, we haven't been charging any interest. We only charge 4.75% interest on the first $5 billion. The rest of the money, when Mr. Imbert spoke with the country on the 19th of May this year, and he gave the mid-year budget review, he told us, it's a formal printed statement from the Minister of Finance, that the total was $27.7 billion. That is $4 billion US dollars in a country this small, gone to pay the debts and the responsibilities of one of our adventurers. Some people call them entrepreneurs and so on. That's another discussion. But that money came out of our treasury. First point, most of that money, there was no interest charged, which means that Mr. Dupre can present a proposal if he regains control of the board, which is what Mr. Perman was just outlining. I don't have any difference with what he said. If he regains control of the board, he can then, and in the absence of the shareholders agreement, which has now expired,
he may
well seek, being the kind of gentleman he is and the kind of negotiator he may well seek to present terms where he's paying off in a kind of higher purchase kind of thing, 15 years, 20 years. And because there's no interest on the table, we are going to suffer. Okay. And there should be a serious rate of interest.
Explain that point a little bit more
for
listeners. What I hear you saying is that if he pulls off this coup, at the meeting
gains
that
Peter
has
the board.
Been talking about, gains control of the board, he can now dictate, he cannot ignore the debt of the government, or the government will not allow him to ignore the debt, but he can make determinations about how the debt is to be repaid.
And that is, and the absence of interest, the function of interest is to attach a value to risk. The function of interest is to attach a value to time. The absence of interest from this agreement is nothing more than high-class professional negligence and political games. High-class political negligence and professional games.
Okay.
Because we need to have interest, because if he's taking 20 years to pay back the money, that needs to cost him more than if he's taking 10 years to pay back the money. Everybody listening to this knows that.
But he has to have an agreement first.
Yes.
From the debtors, the people are holding the debt.
Understood.
Yes.
Understood.
That he's going to take 20
but
years
or
5 years.
But them haven't agreed
years.
In the first place. The MOU has no mention of interest. It's a very slippery slope to negotiate.
Let me weigh in on this issue of interest. Now, Afra is correct. Top point. The $5 billion that I mentioned earlier that was injected into CLICO is now in the form of preference shares, and it attracts an interest rate of about 4.75%.
That's correct.
And that they have been accruing that interest over the period. So that interest is over $1 billion right now, and that is on the books of CLICO as we speak. The CIB portion of it, I'm not too sure if any interest was attached to that, because about $2 billion was injected into CIB, and those depositors got all their money. I also mentioned that to you, Tony. So I'm not too sure whether there was an interest factor on that $2 billion. Now, the money that was paid to the policyholders in terms of the when the People's Partnership came into office, that money, and that is where the illusion comes in. That money wasn't taken from the treasury. What they got was zero coupon bonds or IOUs. And that's Mr. Dukaran's term. He called it an IOU, which means that I give you a piece of paper and over 20 years, I will pay you in installments. So what he has been doing, or what the government, and when I say he's no longer there, but the government is continuing with that position. Those policyholders who got those zero interest bonds, every year they get 1/20th of the value. So let's say they had $100,000. They would get, we're not counting the 75. They got the 75 and the balance was 100,000. So 20 into 100,000 is 5. So $5,000, yeah, they get it. Let's say it started now, 2017, another 5,000, 2018, and so on and so on. Now, the government did not put out the 100,000 up front. So I'm agreeing with Afro, we need to calculate that interest, but we need to know what was the figure we calculated the interest on. So it's not on the full amount that they are calling the 20. It would be on those incremental portions, yeah. You'd have to, and there are calculations you can do to work that out. I mean? But so I just want us to put the thing in a kind of perspective.
That leads to the second point, Peter. Mm. So the first point I was making was about the point that the lack of interest in the whole situation does an injury to the public interest.
Right. Yes.
And I just want to recognize that point first off. The second point is the question of the accounts.
Oh, yes.
I have sued, and I've won the lawsuit in 22nd of July 2015 to get the details of the bailout,
yes,
the audited accounts, and who got paid, and so on and so on. The High Court awarded a judgment to me, and the state, at that time, Minister of Finance was Minister Larry Hawaii, sued, and Minister Coleman, but has continued the lawsuit. So we're now in the appeal court fighting. But the point I'm making about the accounts is that the detail of accounts that I have requested would allow us to unravel some of these important points. For me, let's make it.
Sure.
I wasn't saying anything to contradict him, but
No. I'm just clarifying.
It already can't make sense of it.
Yes.
And more importantly,
you're not fighting today.
No. We don't fight. No, we fight in 5 minutes. But more importantly, the point is that in terms of the negotiation with Mr. Dupree, which is the thrust of what Tony was asking, the whole question of Mr. Dupree making these moves to revert and regain company of the enterprise, the group of companies. In terms of that, the lack of accounts dilutes the state's position in those negotiations.
Absolutely.
Because try to have an imaginary meeting,
yes,
in which Mr. Dupree is sitting here, Mr. Imbert is sitting here, Mr. Imbert makes a case and he ends by saying, listen, whatever you say, the answer has to be 27.7.
Yes.
And Mr. Dupree could say to Mr. Imbert, well, Mr. Imbert, I heard you, we heard you out. And in fact, we understood when it was 5, we could have understood 10 or 12. But when you start talking about 16, 17, 19, 21, 22, 25,
how do
27,
you bring 7, the documentation?
Unless you could give me details.
Absolutely. Yes.
I am not agreeing to that. All and in fact, it goes a little further, Tony. Just to bring Mr. Permanent to the conversation in a different light. Let's suppose Mr. Dupree was to pull a checkbook and write a check for 27.7 and give it to Mr. Imbert and get back his keys. How does he know? Because Imbert has given him an undertaking that in fact all of the policyholders were paid, all of these people were paid. How does he know that Mr. Permel's thousands of members won't turn up and say we weren't paid? And the only way for him to know is for him to be able to see the names of all of the people who received the money, which is what I am suing for.
Okay.
I want all the details of all the payments. But that's the only way to satisfactorily.
Looking at the time.
Sure.
And I know there are lots of things, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. I want to get 2 points on the table.
Sure.
What is in the best interest of the policyholders you represent? What is in Afra talks about the wider national interest. Mm-hmm. What's in the wider national interest? Should Dupree and Company retake this company? Is that in the best interest? And the second part of it, which is when does the governor of the central bank step in and say, okay, technically you have outmaneuvered and you are taking control and so on, but we have a set of criteria that you have to meet. So is it in the best interest of the policyholders for Mr. Dupree to retake the company?
This is Power 102.
Well, based on, that question brings me back to an interview that I have on my policyholders channel on YouTube, where Mr. Dupree apparently was on this, not your program, but on Power 102.
Right.
He apologized to the nation, he apologized to the policyholders, and he said he wanted to make amends for the pain and suffering that would have been caused over the period and so on. Now, talk is obviously cheap, and we don't believe in talk. We believe in actions. So that from where we sit, the government has slammed the door in the face of the policyholders, telling us that we are not entitled to any more money. And the reasons they have given for that is that, one, we sold our policies or sold our rights to our policies, which is ludicrous, because AFRA would tell you, you could sell a piece of property, you could sell a property, you could sell a vehicle, but you can't sell your rights in a policy. You can assign your rights, which is what people do every Monday morning. When you want to borrow money from the bank, you do an assignment of your policy to the bank. When you pay off the loan, the policy is released back to you. And that is the situation that we have now. The other point that he made...
So the question is, is it in the interest of the policy holders?
Based on the fact that the government is telling us categorically they're not paying us what is contractually due to us from CLECO, and not from the Treasury, from CLECO's coffers, but Mr. Dupre is saying, you all are right. You all are entitled to be paid. It is my fault. I apologize, and I want to make good. I want to make good, probably not for his sake, but for his uncle's sake.
So you are saying that you are going to go with the Dupre takeover.
I'm saying whoever is going to pay us our money, we are prepared to sit down and have a serious conversation.
Do you have assurance? And this is where Fit and Proper will come in. What? Mr. Dupre will keep his word.
No. I said we'll have a discussion and we will put things in place to ensure
that
whatever we discuss is...
Afro, what's the national interest in this?
What this is reminding me of, just to bring a little humor into what is a very serious moment, is I attended Freddy Ferreira's book launch on the 14th of June. And of course, Mr. Dupre was there with Mr. Carlos John. And they've been in court against each other a mere 3 months before. And I saw him and I shook my head. And it reminds me of one of Ferdy's sayings that he recounted to us as he was speaking. And Ferdy actually said, he has a series of political sayings. Yes. And one of them is, don't go to have dinner with an alligator, particularly if the alligator is hungry. And particularly, now I don't know what that has to do with this, but I'm just mentioning,
Yes.
He said, don't go to have dinner with an alligator, particularly if the alligator is hungry, and particularly a political alligator.
Uh-huh.
So, Peter, you're looking forward to having a negotiation and discussion with Mr. Dupre. And I wish you well. I want to be on the sidelines. I don't want to be on the field. I want to be in the stadium.
We're going to come back to that. So that your statement is that it's not in the national interest.
No, it's not. It's not. Absolutely not. Because let me just put it in a snap, a quick focus for you. We had an experiment at a time of buoyant expansion worldwide. And this is in the period from about 1995 coming up to about 2005, 2006. And there was a slowdown after that. And it so happened that in 2008/2009, when the crisis was upon the CL Financial Group, the Treasury of Trinidad and Tobago had the resources to be able to handle some of that load. That we have just called in one word, the bailout. So you let Mr. Gentleman and his cohort, Mr. Lawrence Dupre and his cohort, back in control because of the shares and the court and whatever. You let them back in control. And they want control of everything. They want control of CLECO. They want control of all the banks and insurance companies and everything. You let those fellas back in control and we get a crisis in our skin a year or two from now. I can tell you something, brother. They don't have any money in Treasury to rescue anybody.
Peter.
It is recklessness.
They
want to go for dinner with that. Okay, go on.
The man says you're risking your life going for dinner.
You want to do
Ferreira. That's an interesting analogy.
Fody Ferreira.
That's a very interesting analogy for Reverend Brown. Now, let me just say this. As you, I'm sure if you all read my articles over the period, I've been extremely critical of Mr. Lawrence Dupre. As a matter of fact, I called him a gambler in one of my articles, and I went to town on him. As a matter of fact, one of the articles I wrote, I said the award that he got, because he got a national award, he should give it back because of all the nonsense that went on and the fact that he didn't come to the Commission of Inquiry to give evidence. You know, there's a shopping list of indiscretions in my view.
Yes.
But the point is, regardless of my own personal views about Mr. Dupre, I have a particular responsibility to, I would say, like 15,000 policyholders. Although the actual membership, let's say, of my group may be about 2,000. But I could assure you, I'm sure listening to your program here, everybody who's a CLECO policyholder, listening to hear what Mr. Pumel is saying about getting back the money, because at the end of the day, if we succeed, they win.
That's the bottom line.
Bottom line for them. And therefore, I have to put aside whatever my own personal views are and seek the interest of those people who are depending on me.
Even if it means going to dinner with an alligator.
Well, sometimes it's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it.
Then you realize you're for support.
Gentlemen, the last question before we want to give our listeners 10 minutes or so to talk to us, talk back to us. Uh-huh. The last question, at what point should the central bank step in and say that we have a set of criteria and let's see who matches up to be allowed to take over that the company?
Well, I think they should step in now, frankly, because the point is that we have people at the moment, Tony, I made that point a couple of weeks ago in my newspaper column, people at the moment who are practitioners in the financial system. Forget Lawrence and Andre Montaigne and Lawrence Dupree, who are the people who we mainly discuss it. We have people who are practitioners and directors, officers, and shareholders in the financial system who ought to have been declared as not fit and proper under the rules. And the fact that they have let those people get a free pass is going to make a difficult track to go against Dupree and Montaigne. They need to start enforcing their own rules now. There's no right time. No, it's never too late to start doing the right thing. Start doing it now.
Right.
That's my answer.
The argument would be it would be a bit premature in the sense that CLECO, as I said, my focus in terms of the from a regulated company's perspective would be really the CLECO part of it. Now, for the CLECO is only going to be relinquished from the control of the government when they issue a notice. I think it's a section 45 or something. I can't remember the exact section under the Act. And so far, the central bank has not yet issued that particular notice. Yeah. Therefore, CLECO continues to be under the jurisdiction of the central bank. So the only way, and they have appointed the directors. Like recently, you'd have heard of Mr. Dingwall has now become the chairman. Mm-hmm. Wendy Hosang is now out of the picture. And interestingly, he's a former Guardian Life actuary and chief operating officer. So that's another interesting mix to the whole thing. But the point is that the central bank controls the affairs of CLECO as we speak. So that issue doesn't arise of Mr. Dupree taking back until such time until such time that the notice is published. So there is a level of control that the central bank has outside of pronouncement and fit and proper that keeps Mr. Dupree out of CLECO for the time being. So that, but I have no difficulty, and I agree with Afro, they should pronounce, because that's their rules. Regardless of whether Mr. Dupree is in the picture or not, the country should be clear on what is the fit and proper test for people who sit on the boards of regulated companies.
I agree with Afro. But Chris, I'm sure that you have some commercials to go to.
Oh
and
no,
then
let's go straight to the court.
You go straight to the court. All right, so you do this thing much better.
222-8255, 222-8255, or 612-8255, the numbers to call as we face the issues.
So the question now, after all of the discussion we'd like to hear the listeners on, is... would you want the governor of the central bank, and I'm saying the governor, but really the central bank and the government, to continue holding the company until they make some other kind of arrangement? Because the government has said that, and you don't want a government holding and owning an insurance company indefinitely. That's not a place for the government. Or should Lawrence Dupree and his cohorts, as Afra has rightly titled them, hold on to the company or retrieve the company? Mm-hmm. Good afternoon, Kola.
Hi, good afternoon to the panel.
Good afternoon.
If it was me, I would vote for Lawrence Dupree. I think he have an emotional bond with the conglomerate, and I don't think he would do it wrong twice. Mm-hmm. I think he owes it to the shareholders, and I don't think government could bring that, not only that, but, you know, it's the same cocky band.
Thank you very much, caller. So the caller's point is clear. She's going for Lawrence. Good afternoon to you, caller.
Whoa.
Yes, go ahead.
I'm calling to speak to Melissa, who works at
the station. Yeah, you have the wrong number. You're calling part.
She's coming just now.
Good afternoon to you, caller.
Yes, good afternoon.
Yes, sir.
Wasn't the whole Sphere Financial story likened onto a Ponzi scheme?
Yeah, but go on with your point.
My point is, I think the Ponzi scheme is an illegal, fraudulent type activity. Mm-hmm. So first, even the entertaining Lawrence Dupree, who, in my opinion, should either pay back money or be facing the court he and his cohort even have a conversation with him, even being involved in that again. I find it ludicrous.
Okay, thank you very much.
Let me just respond to that point.
Yes, go ahead.
That characterization of Clico was a Ponzi scheme was totally inaccurate, and that was done by Mr. Former Finance Minister.
Your friend, Dukaran.
Winston Dukaran and Dr. Patrick Watson. A Ponzi scheme is what Madoff had in the U.S. Clico has real assets. They have Republic Bank. They have Angostura. So you can't characterize Clico as a
One is a con job. The other one is mismanagement.
Yes,
fraudulent
and some other things involved, but not a Ponzi scheme.
That good afternoon to you, caller.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead, please. We are hearing you.
Good evening.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Yes. Hello.
I want to find out what is the situation with those people who accepted the government bonds for a period of time.
Okay.
Let's suppose
Peter is right here.
Let's suppose you had $100,000 at the time, and the government is going to pay you that money, exactly $100,000 that you had, over a period of years, right? And no interest. No inflation has stepped in over that period of years. What has happened to those people?
Okay, let's allow Peter to respond. We don't have a lot of time. He's got the gist of your question.
Right, and that is basically the point I was making to Afro in terms of the interest aspect of it. Zero coupon bonds are really zero interest bonds. So there's no interest being paid on those bonds. So the question of paying back interest to the government
Work with the 100,000 that the caller has talked about. How much would the average investor have got so far?
Well, in real terms, he would not have gotten back. He would have gone back at least 50%.
$50,000. And so, therefore, 50 is outstanding plus interest.
Over the period, he would have got, over the full 20 years, he would have gotten about 50%.
Right.
When you use the discounted rate.
Right.
But what I'm saying is, what we are fighting for right now for the policyholders is to ensure that they get the accrued interest and the portion
and the capital too.
Yes, of the policy that
so
they have not yet gotten
plus
from Clico. I want to keep stressing that, not from the government, not from the treasury, but from Clico.
Good afternoon to you, caller. Hello.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Go ahead.
For 102.
Yes.
Hello. Good afternoon to the panel.
Yes.
I think it's a very nice program, very interesting. But what I want to find out from your first presenter, the first person who came on, in 2009, was Dr. Rowley, he said Dr. Rowley and Imbert was senior cabinet minister, is that what he said?
Yes, I said.
I thought 2009, Dr. Rowley was a backbencher.
Not 2009, coming into 2009 from 2008.
Yeah.
Right. That's what I'm talking about. In other words.
No, but it said 2009.
Okay, so caller, what is your point?
Well, my point is, I think that Mr. Dupe should get back his company.
Okay. What's the basis for that?
Huh?
And what's the basis for your position?
My basis is that I think that the reason is that he might do a better job the second time around.
Okay. Thank you very much, caller. Good afternoon to you, caller.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. You know, I worked this company as a French fuel company, and the major movers and shakers, I had an early record at the board, the shareholders on the board like Calderon and the late president's daughter and all these people. If you are a foundation member, this thing gets so big. It means then that you have a large portion of money tied up there, and basically you are a PNM supporter. I am not surprised that this thing turned wrong when Dr. Rowley come in office, because the major financial supporters, these big stalwarts who have invested plenty in the party and who have gotten rich off the party is the major shareholders in this country.
Okay.
Please enjoy everybody.
Okay, thank you very much, caller. I'm not too sure that I could decipher in between what the caller is saying. But that's his position. Good afternoon to you, caller.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Yes, go ahead.
It's fine by me if Mr. Dupre gets back his company. He didn't catch me the first time, and he wouldn't catch me now. anything that is looking too good probably has some plastic surgery involved. Be careful, gentlemen. Thank you.
Okay.
But the point is, just to say, it didn't catch you. You may not have invested in Clico, but through this bailout with zero interest, we have all invested in it. And in fact, the pity in the thing is that we all get catch. That's what really happened there.
Final caller. Good afternoon to you. Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Go ahead, please.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Yes.
I want to find out, what about those people who accepted the government bonds in 2009?
Same question.
Right? And the government decided to pay you back your flat amount of money, no interest, over a period of years. And during that time, inflation went up tremendously. Okay.
So you want to find
and
out what,
no
what is happening?
Bonds.
Okay, thank you very much, caller.
You're going to, at the end of a period of time, whenever they finished pay you, you'd have lost a lot of money.
Okay, thank you very much, caller. Peter Pamel has responded previously, but he will respond again.
Yes, we agree with you 100% that you're entitled to be paid your contractual, what is contractually due to you from CLECO. And we are going to do everything in our power to ensure that it's done. At present, this present administration is not inclined to do that, but I'm sure their position will have to change as the issue unfolds.
Gentlemen, let's wind up with a final statement from each one of you. Peter, you're on the ball. What would you like to see happen? This meeting is approaching us when it's 26th.
I've already put my cards on the table.
Yes.
Because the government is telling us we are not paying you, categorically, we are not paying you all any more money from CLECO. And we're saying that is an untenable position. Mr. Dupre is holding out.
And when you're talking about not being paid, you're talking about the rest of the capital invested plus interest.
Yes, which is what the, and just let me just make this point. You had earlier off air, you asked me about the Ramesh Lawrence Mirage group.
Mm-hmm.
They have gotten every single cent that they're entitled to from CLECO because they did not accept the government's offer. Interestingly, they lost their case at the Privy Council. So one has to ask oneself, on what basis were they paid all their money? We are happy for them. I want to also mention that because they are entitled to be paid their money, their contractual from CLECO. So there's a question of discrimination because that group, which is a much smaller group than our group, got paid all their entitlements. And now you're telling this group, when CLECO has the money to pay, you're not paying us. And it begs the question, Why is this thing shrouded in such secrecy over the years? It has spanned two administrations, the People's Partnership and now the PNM. Afra is going to the Court of Appeals, and I'm sure you're going to end up at the Privy Council trying to get information that should be made available. So my final point is, Lawrence Dupre has held out an olive branch and said, look, we want to make good on the wrong that we have committed, and therefore once we are in a position to do so, we will pay you all your money. We have a responsibility to sit down and have a conversation with them. I don't know whether that is going to become a reality, but we have a responsibility as an organization who represent thousands of people to have that conversation with them.
Afra.
Well, I think the public interest needs to be upheld. The Coleman report needs to be published. The private civil suit the Central Bank brought against Mr. Dupre and Mr. Montai and their companies in June of 2011, it has been shrouded in secrecy by a High Court judge's order. We need to get some information about what's happening in that case. And we need to press on with the prosecutions that were hinted at when the Coleman report was finished on the 16th of June of 2016. We need to press on with that work. Okay? But there certainly can't be any case, as some of the callers have said, I don't agree with those sentiments, that Mr. Dupre wouldn't make the same mistake twice, and it's his company and so on. I have a real issue with that. Because we can't criticize, what is the fellow's name? Burke? You were making a joke about Burke earlier. We can't criticize Mr. Burke and give a free ticket to Mr. Dupre and his cohorts. I wouldn't stand for that. I think the public interest needs to be upheld. I think it's wrong. It's wrong like a Crick's biscuit.
Right. And of course, I'm sure you're not going to allow the Central Bank to get away. The Central Bank has to intervene.
Absolutely. They need to do their job.
Okay.